What's up, everybody? Welcome to PSI Love You XOXO episode 75. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside Aloy's best friend, Colin Moriarty.
Let it be known that last week I made some clever...
What was it?
I'm a Lloyd that we can't... Aloy that we can't talk about what we're playing right now. It is Aloying.
Yeah.
You cut it out.
Yeah, I did.
Because you're a little bitch.
That's how embargoes
and
work.
And a little baby.
A lot of people...
A lot of people
don't follow the embargoes to the letter, but Kinda Funny does. And I'll be damned if you're going to ruin that.
I've never broken an embargo.
I'll be damned if you're going to ruin that.
I've never broken an embargo.
You tried to last week, I guess.
It's not. Like, that's such an ancillary...
I know, it's a stupid thing. Yeah, don't say you're playing it or whatever. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Because I read them carefully, too, because some people are like, you know, hide your trophies. Or, you know, like, we have a game now where it's like, play offline and hide your trophies.
And
I'm like,
what was
nah,
weird about
I'm
this
good.
Embargo.
I'm not play
this embargo... was like, yeah, don't talk about it on social media or whatever. I'm like, oh, do we have to hide our stuff like that? I'm like,
that's what I was saying.
We have 2,000 people following us on...
I got a million messages like being 85. Like, how is it? I'm like, I'm not going to answer you. But yeah, I was like, I can make a little clever, cute little thing here.
I know.
And be clever and be cute.
You are clever and cute, though, every day, Colin.
I'm getting really into this thing I'm doing lately where...
What's the thing you're doing?
You know, I've been in errands a lot and you know, discuss this a little bit, but, you know, poop... after the shower.
Sure.
And
you're
then,
getting into that.
And I'm really getting into a rhythm, I want to say, because, you know, my poop schedule's all off.
Yeah.
Used to poop after lunch. Now I'm pooping when I wake up in the morning.
Oh, that's
so
a good
something's
way to be.
A little, but I don't like it because, you know, usually like, you know, I eat a cheeseburger for lunch, it pushes the poop out, right? Then I'm good. And then the next day, you know, the next cheeseburger pushes the poop out.
It's the system, yeah.
Now I'm pooping in the morning, but my body's so out of whack. I get up and I get, you know, get in the shower and then I poop. I'm like, well, I can't abide by that.
It's funny because it sounds like you poop in the shower.
Well,
the way you said it.
Right.
I understand. I'm with you. I understand you don't.
I've never pooped in the shower. I pooped in a bathtub once, but that's for another time.
Okay.
I've been getting really into this habit, this rhythm, in fact, of just giving a little cursory wipe and then just getting right back into the shower. But I like don't even get the rest of my body wet. I just clean.
Just working the butt.
Because like you can't. I have to get used to this thing because I can't walk around all day. Knowing that there's some sort of poop particle on me.
Why don't you just poop before you get in the shower? That's what I do.
Because I can't. What am I? You could just poop on demand.
In the morning, that's my schedule. I wake up, go to the bathroom, I brush my teeth, I go to the bathroom, get in the shower, shave before all that too.
No, I can't. It's not that
regular. You got to do it. You got to have it
that regular. You know. So I guess I'm just really struggling with that, and I wanted to open the show with that because I thought it was really important.
I mean, people have spoken loud and clear that they love that. That they love it when we talk about the poop and the toilet paper and the 3-ply and all that stuff.
Yeah, our real fans do.
Yeah, exactly.
So. That 3-ply, you know, I went, you know, we were out of toilet paper, went to the convenience store, got, you know, some rolls.
Yeah.
8 rolls of this Charmin, $10. Man, convenience. I mean, that's a convenience store.
Yeah.
Though.
That's a convenience price too. Colin, we've been playing a lot of Horizon.
Yes.
Our review, of course, up on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We just recorded it right before this episode. So again, this episode being recorded out of the usual schedule. So if on Monday, Sony's like, we nailed it with Horizon Zero Dawn based on the reviews, we're shutting down. We wouldn't know that if Shuhei just pulled the plug on that. So we don't know. I thought we'd start, Colin, with topic of the show. Toss. Topic of the show, of course, is Horizon Zero Dawn. Don't click off your YouTube. Don't click off your MP3 yet. It's going to be spoiler-free discussion. But when I got to say...
It takes place on the moon!
Oh, they terraformed the moon! Dinosaurs, robots on it! So spoiler-free, these are questions from you on Twitter when I announced the review is going up. And of course, hello, welcome to PSI Love You XOXO. It is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast. It is the number one PlayStation podcast, despite all the poop talk, thanks to your support. And it posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. So go get it. Like, subscribe, share, all that shit. Colin, our first question is going to start with Diogo Ghosh. He says, hey Greg, hey Colin. Wait for Colin to reply and high five him.
She's a moon man
with Horizon's launch being just on the horizon. Not original, I know. I'm afraid that it will be too big of a game. Over the last couple of months, I've tried to get into Witcher 3 and like it. And get into Witcher 3 and like it because it was so praised. But there was just too much to do. A lot of walking around and, frankly, clunky gameplay that annoyed me. Do you guys think that Horizon Zero Dawn will be too big of a game in a way that becomes overwhelming? I'm on a limited gaming schedule, but games, the scope of the size of Far Cry and Watch Dogs, feel perfectly doable. Best wishes from Brazil. Diogo Ghosh.
It's way more Far Cry than it is The Witcher. The game is what? I mean, 40 hours to do everything?
To do everything?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still, what, I'm at 42 hours, level 48 right now.
So 45 hours?
Yeah, 45, 48, I would say, maybe in there and stuff. Here's the thing. That is to do everything. I'm going to do every side quest. I'm going to platinum this bitch. I'm going to do all these different things because that's what I'm trying to do out there. Tim Geddes is in the similar boat to you, where Tim doesn't like open world games. He was like, jumped into Horizon. He talked about it on the Gamescast exclusive that'll be live next week, where he was like, you know, just after the tutorial, a little bit of the missions, I'm not really feeling it. I don't know how to feel about it, blah, blah, blah. Then he went through the first big moment of it and he's like, I'm all the way in. And what's fixing it for me is I'm just main pathing it. You can sit there and main path it. Eventually there's going to be a point you're going to come to where it's like, you have to help this guy. You have to do this to get these threads that are going that way to come back into the story that way.
Boring.
Exactly. Boring. He's doing it wrong, but you can do it. So I think, honestly, Horizon is going to be how much do you want to put into it? When I initially beat it, I hadn't done a lot of the side quests. I hadn't done, I guess that's not true. I'd done a lot of side quests, but I hadn't done all of them. And so now that I'm going back and doing it, I've already replayed the ending again because it's a XP buffet. It's a way to get up to 50 for that trophy faster. And also, I wanted to test one of the trophies to see if I had the thing that I need. I don't know if that's one of the hidden ones.
The other XP buffet is the trials.
Oh yeah, the hunting ones. Yeah.
No, not the hunting ones. The different places you go where they're like, do these three things for these tokens and all those. Right? That we talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, those are hunting trials. Yeah, the Blazing Sun. Oh, the
okay.
You're
talking about from the hunting lodge, which I was a little confused because you go and do bounties for them.
Yeah. No, not the bounties. Yeah.
It is interesting. So I'm 29 hours in, 74% completed, I am with you. That was one of my concerns too, friend. Was, you know, when Aloy first gets into the spaceship and goes to the moon, I was like super fucking.
I thought we were on the moon the whole time. I didn't realize we started.
Well, it's deeper than that.
Huh. All right. My apologies.
And but when she first goes to the moon, I was like, this is an incredible, you know, turn of the narrative here. And I'm ready for it to be over. I don't think I can really exceed this.
Yeah.
And then they do. They somehow exceed even her going to the moon. And one of the craziest things about so. I'm with him in the sense that I went into this thinking it was going to be in the teens in terms of hours length, that the open world would be more cursory and not. I mean, I played the game, so I knew that the world was big, but I didn't know how big the world was. It's very big, but I don't feel like it's ever overwhelming. I agree with you that Witcher 3 is bogged down, in my opinion, by incredible amounts of volume of just random ass shit to do and clunk.
Yeah.
Clunk galore. I don't think that, and I don't think it's a bad game. I actually think Witcher 3 is great. It's just that this game is better.
Game is trimmed to the point of like, even when it was like you talked about the, you know, the Hunter's Lodge, we have to do missions there. When I was like, it was one of the, you know, last trophies I had to go do was go to get to the top of that and, you know, fight this thing. I was like, all right, cool. And when I start that journey, I was like, fuck. And like, there's a cut and it is like, go get these trophies and come back with these. I'm like, is this going to be going on? Oh no, I'm done. Okay, cool. These things progress nice and quickly. And it's a few hours of it, but it's a good few hours. It's not overstaying. It's welcome. Side quests are meaty. Some of them go on for a while, but the fact that they're usually different is great. A lot of the times I'm looking at a trail and running after it, but that's fine.
Well, let me put it in these terms.
Put it in those terms, Colin.
I think that let's give you a buffer of a few hours. You're a better gamer than most. You're a more experienced gamer than most. So I can't imagine that it would take more than 50 hours based on what we've talked about and how far I've come, that it, more than 50 hours where you get 100% rating. Now, I played Witcher 3 for a comparable amount of time. Actually, I played it for about 40, 45 hours. I was nowhere near...
You weren't even on Act One, right?
So yeah, no, I wasn't actually. So because I became so obsessed with the question marks on the map.
Yep.
So no, they're totally, totally two different kinds of
games.
That's
the thing, is like, this one is great with it. Hey, there's an exclamation point, or I come into a new area and hey, there's three exclamation points. I get those, I come back, I turn them in, and that's it. There's not another 12 exclamation points.
Yeah, I mean, that was the horror of Witcher 3, where I'd like go talk to someone and then I'm like, oh thank God. And I go to the map and that question mark, it's like five more question marks. And I'm like, why?
It's like, why?
Stop. So yes, it is way more in line with a Ubisoft game. But even longer than that.
I like the idea in the narrative we're starting to spread right now that Horizon Zero Dawn is like Sons of Liberty, where it's like it's 2 hours of everything you've seen, and then Aloy goes to the moon and there's fucking space marines up there.
It's crazy. It's not the first time, you know, Final Fantasy IV takes place on the moon too.
Gus from Rooster Teeth asked this question. If you get disconnected from the internet during single player, do you get kicked back to the title screen and lose your progress? I don't know what kind of fucked up PC games you're playing, Gus, but no, you're fine here. It's a single player game. Don't worry about it. This ain't some weird ass. You ain't playing The Division. You ain't doing something weird over there.
That said, I did. Not that it has anything to do with Horizon, but I was playing it, but it has more to do with PSN. I was playing it not on my primary. I was at Aaron's the entire time I was playing, so I was playing on her PS4.
Yeah.
So I have to be, you know, connected to the internet to play it because it is a digital download.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is weird, by the way. Sony sent us this game digitally. They never send us AAA exclusives digitally. I can't think of the last one that they that we didn't get a case for. Can you?
Gravity Rush 2.
AAA exclusives that we didn't get.
I know. I was a meatball right down the plate for you. I'm trying to think. Wasn't Uncharted 4 a code?
No.
Okay.
That's just an aside. So I was playing it digitally, and then the PSN was undergoing this random... It wasn't going mains. It was just dying. And I couldn't play for like a night. I was like, this sucks, man.
Yeah. So make sure you activate... And this doesn't work for you, I know. But for you out there, we've talked about this before. Another PSA for you. Activate your PS4 as your primary console. Even if it's your only PS4 and you're thinking it must know it's, you have to go in and say, you are my primary PS4 console in the settings. And then this doesn't
matter. Then you won't have any fiascos such as this.
Don't worry about it. Our next spoiler-free Horizon question comes from Zyger. Zyger says, it's clear Sony wants to make Horizon into the next big PS franchise. Do you think this game will set the groundwork for it?
Yes.
100%. We talked about this in the review, obviously, which is also spoiler-free. Synopsis, Aloy's great. Story caught me off guard. The whole fucking world is awesome just to explore, to run around in. The story keeps you engaged. They introduce new characters. There's definitely the wink of how they would, what, you know, what number two would be and all these different things. Like, I think they clearly want that. You think they've already started working on it.
I think
that they'd be stupid not to. They know, they have to know they have something special here. And I mean, you're starting from we're not, you know, alone to say that in the past 2 years, we've given it our E3 game of the show. Mm-hmm. It's gotten accolades on top of accolades and it delivers on all them. That's the most important
thing. That's what I was saying in the review was that it exceeds my expectations. I had high expectations for it. But they exceeded my expectations in almost every way. I went out on the limb and said that, with the exception of The Last of Us, this is the best game to ever come out of Sony's first-party studios. I stand by that 100%. You're never going to, or not never, but you'll rarely find a game of this depth and this breadth as an exclusive on a console. And I think that's what makes it special for PlayStation audience as well. It's good for millions of copies sold, and I assume that the sequel is greenlit, and I would be surprised if they weren't already working on it, and I would be surprised if you didn't see it within 2.5 years. You know, like that's just me throwing out the spitballing, because they have this architecture, they rejiggered the world. Gorilla to make this game. Gorilla wasn't prepared to make a game like this, and this is not the kinds of games they make. And you made the great point that, you know, in the review, that this is akin to Naughty Dog's jump from Jack to Uncharted.
Yeah,
them going back and make it, like, I had assumed that they were making Killzone. I think that there's rumors that they're probably not making that anymore. It'd be a fucking shame for them to ever make anything but this for a little while now.
Yeah,
because this is so far in excess.
You figure, I mean, quality. And that's what's awesome about it, is that the Gorilla team is made up of amazing, awesome, great folks we've worked with for years. But Killzone's always been that, and it's an acquired taste. Oh, it's not Halo. Oh, don't never forget the fucking pre-rendered trailer they put. All that fucking garbage. And like, this is like,
that was real.
This is a hard stop to everything that's come before it. You will not hear that. That isn't the baggage people are going to attach to this anymore. No. That people are going to be thirsty for this. They're going to be dying for this. Today, I'm 42 hours into this game I'm playing, and I have that moment of like, oh fuck, I hope there's DLC for this. Like, that's how into this world. I'm like, yeah, just give me more quests. Give me more shit.
I hope there's not. Stop. Just put the game out and just move on to the next one.
I mean, like, I hear you, and I would like that too, but I have to imagine there were side quests that got cut or something. There's going to be some little expansion here or there. But I like you said before, you and I both went media blackout on it. I'm not sure if they've ever talked about it before, but they delivered, so it doesn't matter. Some little shit named Andy Cortez says, do you feel like the dialogue choices had an actual impact on the game?
No.
Yeah, they're not dialogue choices in the way that this is going to offend somebody and make them not be with you. I think that it's I talked about this in the Let's Play. Almost spoiled a game, another game's embargo coming up. In this Let's Play, I talk about it, or the 4 hours I played, the preview thing I did, where the wheel that pops up is just you coloring in the book. It's similar to like a Telltale thing where you're just shading Aloy, shading the story to be your thing, but you can say whatever you want. I think it's interesting the differences. Like I said, I think I said in this video or last video, right before this, I went through and beat it again to see if I could pop this trophy or whatever. And when I went through it this time, there's a conversation that happens and I picked another choice and it was, oh wow, that's like her tone is so much different and like the delivery. So, and it was like, that's a much more interesting way. I went with the fist on my first real playthrough, my canonical of like, no, fuck you. And this one, I was more like the heart, and it's like, okay, this is a soothing thing, but overall it's just window dressing. It doesn't change anything.
Yeah. I think it's totally meaningless apart from the direct dialogue that happens right after you make the choice. Otherwise it just snaps back in. So no, it's no way like Paragon Renegade stuff like Mass Effect or anything like that. And I would go as far as to say that it's not even really needed. be perfect honest.
No, no, 100%.
Just like Uncharted, where I'm like, I don't even understand why this is here.
Sure. No, well, Uncharted I still get, because Uncharted, I think it was just that. Here's, again, we're going to let you, here's this steak we're giving you. What kind of sauce do you want to put on it? You've been with it this long. Let's have a memory of what mattered to you kind of thing. And this one, I think it is just that moment of, this one's an interesting one because it's what I like about choice. I didn't like Paragon Renegade decisions, good or bad, Infamous decisions, because once I pick the first one,
you're tied in.
Just auto calibrate, and now you pick them because you know what I'm going to do. Because why would I fuck it up? This one, since they don't matter, there is a little bit more to it of like, well, in this situation, I'm feeling this, so I want to do this.
I always use my brain. So for people that don't know, there are just three options: use your fist, your brain, or your heart.
Yeah,
and the brain's kind of like in the middle, and that's what I always use because I'm like, I don't want it to be a bitch.
But this is a non-spoiler one. But that first choice, you know, when we're first introduced to the system, right there, I went brain, hand. You know what I mean? I went with the brain. Well, that doesn't make sense. You understand, as somebody who's played it, what I mean. I went for the brain. And then on the, you know, the final choice, which you haven't gotten to yet, and again, isn't like, you know, do I blow up the moon or do I save the moon?
Hard. You got to be careful when you do that.
Yeah, I know. You don't want, man, to fuck up the title pools and stuff like that for everybody back on Earth in 1989. the other one, but in the end, though, I went with the fist, right, on my real one. And like, it's not that she changed or what, it's just like a different situation of like, these are varying levels of degrees of what happened in the first choice and what happens in the final choice. Like, and I like the ability that I get to do that. And like, it doesn't matter. I didn't need it. It didn't keep me in or take me out, whatever.
There was one specific choice I made. It wasn't even a heart, like fist choice or whatever. Yeah. It was like these other things where I'm like, I think this might have affected a side quest that I had access to. I'm not sure that that's possible, so I don't really know. We can talk about it off camera.
Yeah, of course.
Other than that, in terms of like the actual choices, like the dialogue choices, no. I didn't feel like they were needed, and they don't affect anything. But yeah, they show a different Aloy depending on... I hate that fucking name, by the way. But it's a really bad name.
Well, it's because, it's just like, all right, Aloy. I mean, it's gonna. I assume we'll get used to it like we got used to Vita.
Yeah, it doesn't ruin anything for me.
Sure.
She should have just been named Jessica.
Oh, hey, Jessica. She's around all these different people. Hey, Jessica, you want to go to the moon for us? Yeah, you got it. Boo! But the dialogue choices, I agree. But here's something else I found interesting, and I think it spoke to, you know, people are asking about side quests, you know, comparing them to The Witcher and stuff. We talked about that in the review a bit, and the fact that I don't think they were fleshed out to that level, and I didn't care about them to that level. And I think what I noticed the most on it, and why I think that it stood out to me that I didn't care about these side quests the way I've cared about Fallout side quests or Mass Effect, is that when the wheel pops up, when you're having these conversations, and as soon as they gave me the out, I usually took the out. Very rarely was I like, the story you are trying to sell me is interesting enough that I'm going to investigate. And tell them, no, what about your sister? Like, oh no, why are you upset? I was usually just like, all right, cool, I got it. I'll go kill whatever. Really?
I always talk to everyone as much as they would talk to me.
See, I usually am that way in an RPG, and this one I was just like, but like, for certain people. But then there was like people, the dudes you show up to when you first get to Meridian, and they're arguing about what they want from you, if they want like this lens or that lens and stuff. Yeah. I was like, you guys are awesome. I hope you come back. And you never did.
Quarreling merchants.
Talked to you once and left, and I was like, blah. And I was like, you know what? Colin and I should have been voices for those characters, because that's pretty much our relationship. Mario Not Bros says, what's the one thing Horizon Zero Dawn does best and the one thing the game does worst?
That's a great question. Does best gameplay. I think that the story, obviously fundamentally sound, revelatory, fucking super interesting, setting amazing. When you find out where it really takes place and when, I think you'll be quite surprised. But I think the gameplay is just rock solid. I think the gameplay is just rock solid. Aloy feels great to control. Bow and arrow mechanics are great. There's different weapon choices, melee choices, stealth choices. I think the gameplay is really what makes it. It's a similar situation to Fallout, or to Far Cry rather, where I'm like, I really love Far Cry. Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 4 especially are fucking phenomenal games. But they're not phenomenal at the level Horizon's phenomenal, because while they have great gameplay and just really that great Ubisoft rope of things to do, they don't really deliver super well on the story. I mean, the stories are interesting and they're fine, but this game delivers on all those fronts. But I think, you know, you fundamentally, a game like this would not be fun to play if it wasn't fun to play.
Yeah.
And I mean, so I think you have to kind of defer to that.
Yeah. For me, like everything you said is correct. For me, the thing it does best is the sense of wonder, where if it's a story thread, if it's the revelation of what's about to happen, if it's, I just want to keep going and figure out what's going on, there's that. But then there is exploring the world. And I told a, you know, vague story about, you know, finding this hole in the ground and jumping into it and then finding out. But like, it's not just that moment. There were so many moments of it. And something I didn't talk about in the review that I want to give it props for is that it's a game that encourages you to explore. It doesn't penalize you. Like, there are so many times, like you've played these games where There's a fucking mountain. Something's at the top of the mountain. How the fuck do I get up there? And there's like the one path. And this is they did a great job of most of the time that was like, yeah, there's the path you're supposed to take, but you can hop on these rocks and really kind of break it.
Yeah,
and
just roll press up, X over and over
roll
again.
Roll up a hill and like get up there. And it's like, okay, I got up there. Right. And it was like, that's really liberating. It didn't annoy me. I was fun. I wanted to do that. But then like you said, like finding a new monster, finding a new machine, going out and running into these things, finding new weapons, the weapons being rewarding. You know, I mean, I did my Hunter's Lodge quest line right before this. And so that's, you know, more than 40 hours into the game. And when they're like, oh, I'm going to give you a special weapon, I'm like, fuck you. Like, I've already bought all these weapons. They're amazing. I won't need it. And I got them like, oh, fuck, these are better weapons. Like, shit, this is actually rewarding. Yeah, so this matters. Reward.
Yeah. That's a great point, though, in terms of like pathfinding and stuff like that. Like, the game, I always go back to Assassin's Creed 3, for instance, like where there was this thing on this ridge on the map and there's no. You have no idea how the fuck to get there. It's just annoying. Like, everyone, you're right. Like, every game has these collectibles, for instance, where I'm like, how the fuck do you get this thing? Like, this is so annoying, and it makes you want to just put the game away. And the map is like, in terms of topography, is actually really interesting if you look at it, because you could see the topography. It's not just a flat map, or it's not one of those things where the slider, where like you can only see certain parts of it and you slide it down, and then like, these are the higher parts and these are the lower parts. Yeah. It shows you in such a way where you can see how to get to everything you need to get. It's a very well-made game in that respect.
Really good navigation system, too. Where it is, like, you drop the pin or you drop whatever, and then you run, and it's doing the breadcrumb thing, and not just saying go over here. It's giving you the actual
like
path.
How to get there.
And sometimes there's plenty of things where it's like, well, your path sucks. I'm just going to run across this field. But then there are the points where I'm like, I don't know what the fuck. How do I get up there? And then you do it like, oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's cool. I agree with you. I respect that. I think the thing the game does worst, and I talked about it a little bit at length in the review, and I can't get too into it without spoiling it, is I just think the dialogue's not good at certain points. I think that. I want to sever that from the story and the narrative, because I think those things and the setting, these are all phenomenally delivered. There's just a sense of disbelief that you have to have kind of suspended, I guess, in order to be like, why are you talking like this, and how do you know what the fuck you're talking about? It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, just no matter how you spin it, it doesn't make sense. So people understand what I mean, I think, when they play it, and that was a hang up for me in the game, not a critical hang up, not an Achilles heel. But certainly one of those things where I'm like, how do you know what you're talking about? Like, it doesn't make sense. And again, I'm a writer, but I'm not clever enough to figure out the solution. So they probably weren't either. And that's I accept that. But that is, I think, the thing the game does worse.
For me, for worst, I think it's first time RPG stuff. We talked about in the review again, where, the map's awesome and it's huge and I love that, but I can't turn things off. I can't toggle things. I'd like a little bit more information. There's not a legend. There's not this. It's like little dumb stuff, but it's like, if I have to sit there and do it. Plus, like, when you're talking to people, sometimes it looks super weird. Andy says, does it match the expectations that you had for the game? Was the hype justified, or were we fooled by marketing?
It's wildly exceeded my expectations,
100%,
which were already very high. Make no mistake about it. This is a powerhouse of a game, and is going to sell millions of copies. Will spawn a franchise, and we'll put Guerrilla on the map in a way that Killzone was never able to do. And I think that's why they greenlit it, and I think that's why they were excited about it. I think that's why they portrayed it the way they did over multiple E3s. I think that's why they delayed the game. I think it's all going to work out fine for them. And I would be shocked if by 2019, 2020, we didn't get a sequel.
Corey, I'll say, Savas says, how long is the end game replayability? That's up to you. I mean, the end game after you come back is clean up the side quests, the errands, the tutorial stuff you didn't do, which is what I'm doing now. Like I said, 42 hours in right now. I figure at 45, I should have the platinum. At 48, somewhere in there, if I slow it down. I don't think these errands are going to take me that long. And I think they have to then, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is they're going to open a side quest that then gives me the final thing I need for the one trophy. But it's all up to you. Replayability, there's none. I mean, you could go back and replay it on a harder difficulty
like
if you
Mass
want,
Effect
but that's not what you want. Yeah, there's no choices, so why would you? Unsexiest Comedy said, was it worth passing on Neo and For Honor to make sure I get this on day one?
They're very different games. I think it was. I think so. Well, I think so too. I think For Honor specifically, and I could be totally wrong about this, I think For Honor has bomb written all over it. And I'm not talking about it from a critical perspective. I just can't.
For Honor's fun to play. I enjoy playing.
I just can't imagine with all of the things going on around it that For Honor is going to resonate at all. But I could be totally wrong about that. So I don't think that was necessarily a mistake there, because I'm not sure with an online multiplayer centric game like that you're going to have this environment rife for play in a few months the way you would at launch. So you kind of have, in other words, lost your opportunity to play that game, I think, effectively, if you don't get it at launch. Neo is a very different game. I think Neo is awesome. But I think clearly Horizon's better, and I don't think you made a mistake by doing that. But I would double back to Neo as well.
Renan Quatillion says, has Tim played on PlayStation 4 Pro? Good point. Yeah, we've played on PS4. Tim is playing on a PlayStation 4 Pro. He says it looks beautiful. I think it looks beautiful on a normal TV. I think it looks
perfectly fine and runs perfectly fine on a PS4.
We kind of answered that. Oh, Kyle Stevens says, does the scavenging for parts and materials ever feel like a chore?
No.
The only thing that felt like a chore for me was when I just had too much all the time, where I get it down to, all right, cool, like, I'm not going to get rid of all my wood because I use it for arrows, and I'm not going to do this, but that. And it's like, once in a great while, you have a side quest where you talk to somebody and it's like, we need you to go get this. Oh, you already have it. And I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I do. And so I hate deleting shit or selling shit that, like, there's things in the game that are specifically sell this to a merchant for shards. Then there's ones that are like, or craft with it. And I hate getting rid of stuff, but eventually you just don't need any of it.
Well, I think that there's I'm sure you notice a really clever solution to this, which some games do, which I think is important, which is a buyback system. So that if you sell anything to a merchant that you want to buy back later, you can do that. If you need it for some reason, which I think is essential because of having, there's no literal encumbrance here like Fallout, but there is an encumbrance in terms of like amount of items you can carry. Mm-hmm. I found scavenging to be really satisfying in the sense that you just hit triangle to scavenge, you hit triangle again to accept everything, you're just putting it all away. The game actually does something very clever that I have never really seen to the granular level that this game does, which is with items, which is like you go into a merchant and you go sell things, and it's like, you'll need this for this. And you'll see items where it's like, all this item is good for is for scrap, so you know you can get rid of it like with impunity. So in other words, the game kind of gears you towards like, you can sell anything you want, but you'll probably need this to craft later, so you might want to keep it. Whereas this thing is really only good for trading and only good for shards.
And the big thing was, like, for me, like, you know, when I'm getting into it, I'm like, well, this is for using to make a, you know, the corruptor arrows or whatever, and it's like, I've never ever, I don't use those, so I don't even need to worry about this. Right. I'll sell that material. That's not what I use it for. And if I use fire and ice a lot, well, I'm going to keep those around, make sure I have that.
The game does a really nice job, Greg, I think, in this point of anticipating what you are anticipating having a problem with. In other words, everyone knows in a role-playing game, it's like, oh, God, like, is there a penalty for selling this? Some games let you sell things and like break the game in a way, or break side quests. Like, this game doesn't let you do that. There's always a way out.
Dylan Jones asks, do you see any game coming out this year that can surpass Horizon? Is Horizon Sony's best exclusive ever?
Not ever, but I think second best ever.
I think, I mean, it's a stacked year for games. Yes. And like, without, you know, I mean, we don't, I mean, just talk about this spring, right? It's we have Mass Effect, you have Zelda, you have Persona. Like, those are three fucking awesome games right there. You assume to be awesome games as well that are on the hype. Everybody's crazy about them. Like, what does that mean for Horizon? I don't know. Let alone, what does that mean for fall when things come out and everything else starts?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, Greg, is that, like, Neo is certainly going to be some people's games of the year. Zelda, obviously, unless it turns into a Twilight Princess fiasco, is going to be great. By the way, just on that note, I was looking through my email, and I'm like, fuck, I still have the Switch pre-order. So I was like,
you knew you were gonna keep it.
Well, I was
Betty
like,
Ann told you to keep.
She did, but I forgot, and I was like, oh, I'll just keep it. And then I didn't realize I didn't order Zelda, so I went and ordered it because God knows you probably won't be able to download it. Nintendo probably won't be able to connect to the internet the day the thing comes out. But the big one that I'm surprised you're forgetting later in the year is Red Dead, which is going to be a significant player in Game of the Year. Not only because it's, I'm sure, going to be awesome, but because it comes out in the fall, which is always going to be more on people's minds. I think in a normal year, Horizon would easily, like, I can name years in past where I'm like, Horizon would, if it came out this year, would have easily been the best game of the year. It is certainly my favorite game of the year. But it is, as you said, I mean, Persona is going to be,
it's so
huge.
Early in the year. Yeah. I mean, it's it's definitely my game of the year right now, but it's not, Neo's like, it's really got some
player. Mass Effect's going to be a player. Red Dead's going to be a player. You have your usual Call of Duties and all those kinds of things, plus games we don't know about yet. So it is going to be in that conversation. No doubt.
Yeah. Michael says, how deep are the RPG elements in the game compared to other open world RPGs?
Not very deep. I think it's as deep as you would get in Far Cry, or maybe a little deeper. Like, you're not getting into Witcher level depth. Or
the skill tree is very basic. Go down. Okay, you got them all. Now you want to go over there. You want to do this. This doesn't unlock without that. Okay, but it's not like it's crazy branching anything. You can get it. Like we were saying in the review too, like, you go through it and you know pretty quick what you want from that skill tree, and then you kind of just forget about the rest.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the bummers about the game. Not a bummer, but it's because it happens, unfortunately, too commonly in open world games, which is just the skill trees are not very thoughtful sometimes. And I'm not saying it's not thoughtful here. I'm just saying, like, I don't give a fuck.
It's not super interesting.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, very I don't even really care.
You want a 30%? You can knock armor. I'm like, I don't ever use my staff to hit people. I'm always shooting from a distance and popping off stuff that way.
Yeah, so that is a problem.
And the same thing, I think, goes for, as I talked in the review, like, you don't get to choose your own outfit, like, build it from scratch. You buy different outfits that you wear that have, you know, buffs, pros and cons and stuff to them. You can slot mods on them. You can slot mods on your weapons. But the game, I never felt like I was in a thing where I'm like, oh shit, I'm getting fucking destroyed by this guy who's using ice. Granted, I'm playing on normal, getting destroyed by this used ice. I better put on my ice protective gear and put my mods in there to do the ice stuff. Like, that didn't happen for on that level as an RPG. Weapon wise, yeah, like, but it was more for like, oh, I'm in these hunt. I got to do these hunting challenges where they're telling me to freeze this thing before I attack it. So go in, get my bow, put all my, you know, like plus 40 ice damage on all of them, and then go out and use it. But outside of that, in a normal battle, I'm like, I'm doing fine.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, what I would do, and I don't know about you, but it would be like, all right, cool. Look at it, scan him with the focus, the triangle that puts it in like detective mode. All right, cool. He's weak to fire. Shoot him with fire arrows. He lands. Then I just beat him to shit with my hard arrows. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't like, oh man, I got to do this, do that. Dennis, how do I get him right to where I want him to be? Gus says, what do you guys hope to see from the inevitable sequel?
I can't talk about that. That's spoiling the game.
What I want to see is just them improve upon everything. As I put in the review, or in the review we just did, right? The fact that, yeah, like, there's little stuff. Fix the map. Do this. You know, spice this up. Make your side quests. Make me come back to characters that seem interesting. Give characters more quirks. Everybody seemed very vanilla in terms of the side quests.
There's something very specific I want to see from the sequel, but I can't talk about it.
Space cows?
Yes.
Okay. Bowie says, how violent is the game? I want to show my young daughter Aloy, but I'm concerned the game may be too graphic.
No, that's not violent. Yeah. It really isn't.
I think that, like, you can make an argument for the opening, not the opening, but the opening big moment before we go out on our own. Yeah. That gets kind of rough, but it's not like gory, blood gushing, all this different stuff, and then you're beating the shit out of robots for the rest of the thing.
Yeah, I mean, you kill humans in the game, but it's never...
It's not gory. Great example, go watch the 4 hours or the Let's Play thing we put up from back in the day, me going through the bandit camp, where you shoot fucking bandits in the face and they just fall down. It's not like they're like, ah! My eye! My moon suit!
Puncture his moon suit.
That's how they get you. And final question, specifically, straight up, Horizon Zero Dawn related, comes from Alex. Alex says, hey guys, long time, first time. With the release of Horizon Zero Dawn next month and the hype surrounding it, what do you see happening in the future for Killzone? Do you think Guerrilla will release another Killzone this generation or let it hibernate until the inevitable PS5? Thanks for all you do in the last through the years.
I can't keep straight what I read about this. My theory the whole time was that they were working on it already. There seemed to have been an indication that someone linked me to something where they're not or something like that. I think it's entirely within the realm of possibility based on what we're seeing that Killzone might be dead. Although they don't really kill any of their IP.
It could come
back later, yeah. Just like Resistance. But part of me wants them to release Killzone because I think it would be cool to have this huge studio that's making two games at once or whatever, but that seems to be something they're getting away with. They tried to do that with Naughty Dog and then they got away from that because it seemed to be maybe complicated in ways that we can't anticipate. What I assume is that Killzone's not in development because my original theory was that Cambridge is working on Killzone,
yeah.
Which they no longer exist. So, and this is obviously way more important.
Yeah, I think similar to what I said in the review where I think this is, you know, Jack and Daxter to Uncharted, Killzone to Horizon. Like, they have something special here and they want to incubate, iterate on it, because this is going to be a hit in a different way than Uncharted was, because you're putting this out on the most popular console right now. People are going to snatch this up. People are going to go crazy for it. Whereas Uncharted got to be played by the hardcore fans and then build on that for Uncharted 2's big coming out party. Now, more eyes than ever on this. They're starting, I think, ahead of where Uncharted Drake's Fortune was.
Oh, definitely.
And like, now you have to sit there and think about like what the fuck this game will look like when they put out Horizon 2.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, this is not a Drake's Fortune level effort.
Yeah.
Drake's Fortune's great, but this is well beyond an excess of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horizon's awesome. Go watch our review. It's spoiler free for more on Horizon. But for right now, let's start the show with what is and forever will be Roper's Report. Time for some singular possessive news.
There are 10 items on the list.
A baker's dozen, Horizon style, moon, moon, moon.
Number one. Think Sony isn't crazy enough to make a third handheld an official follow-up to Vita? Think again. A patent from 2015 was recently dug up by NeoGAF, and the patent is for a portable PlayStation device with detachable controllers. What's interesting about this isn't only the device's existence in patent form, but that it was developed independently from Switch, even though it's so similar to it. In other words, Sony and Nintendo seem to have arrived at the same conclusion. Sony patents all sorts of shit it never uses or makes, just like every other electronics company, so that doesn't mean it's coming out or that Sony intends on deploying the device. Still, what it does show is that they're thinking about it, at the very least. And That's an important thing that kind of everyone's like, it's a Switch. Guys, I'm like, guys, this was made totally like long before anyone had any idea what the Switch was.
Yeah.
So no, it isn't a copy of the Switch. They seem to have arrived at the you know, these detachable controllers or controllers on the edge of tablet-like things are not, you know, these started actually even years before we saw Switch. So it's not exactly a unique or novel thing, but still.
Do you think we'll ever see this?
I think we might. Okay. I really think that, maybe not this, but I will not give up the ghost that they might put another handheld out. And I simply say it for this reason. Smart businesses don't cede entire industries, entire segments of an economy to their competition uncontested. And that's what they would be doing if they didn't continue to fight in the handheld space. And I just don't think it's smart business, because they could stumble on something that's really great and really big. Vita outsold Wii U. So it's not like the Wii U's successor. We have a successor to the Wii U that I think will do fine. We'll see how it happens. But if the Wii U could get a successor, then why can't the Vita get a successor? And
because I feel like you want to.
Well, I was just going to say, 3DS is at like 60 million plus sold, and the Switch is going to now play in that space. I know that they're trying. Nintendo's very much like, well, it's a console, but it really isn't, and it's not going to be looked at as one. And they're probably going to have to pivot off of that message eventually, especially when people realize that the consoles that are now and the consoles that we're going to see at E3, especially with Scorpio, are going to be well in excess of power of these things. And you don't want to play in that space. You want to play in the handheld space.
Yeah.
When Sony looks at that, and they look at that, and they're like, there's money to be made here. Like, we didn't do Vita right, but is this a way for us to do it right? And so... I don't know the details of it. I would say if I was a betting man, I would never bet on them doing it, but I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility. And I think it's smart business. We own a business and it's so contrived, but to make money, you must spend it.
Sure.
You must put yourself out there. And, they're really one for two. PSP was fucking huge. So it's not like, and I understand the PSP came out in a totally different climate, a totally different environment. 2005 was pre-smartphone, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I get it. Mm-hmm. But 60 million 3DSs sold is nothing to fucking laugh at. If Sony could even reach half of that number with a successor to Vita, they would be stupid not to do that. 30 million is a lot.
I feel like what'll stop it from the fact that you're saying, like, you know, you don't want to cede the hill, you don't want to give up this market space, is that I feel like that was the messaging with Vita. I feel like that with PSP, yeah, it sold really well, right? But popular opinion behind it wasn't like it was a huge success. We feel it was. I loved my PSP.
It was, but it was 80 million units. Is
sure, but it was for homebrew. Like, there was such an uptick for that. People who weren't buying UMDs and weren't playing fucking Secret Agent Clank. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't seeing that kind of turnover. And I think Vita was their thing of like, all right, we're not going to give up this market. We're going to try, and we're going to put two sticks on it. We're going to give you trophies. We're going to add in all this touch stuff. We're going to do it. And like, when that went down even worse, I think that was when they were like, all right, I don't know if we can care. I don't know if we should care anymore about this. And I think that we've talked about it before on this show. Like, you can see it. The PlayStation is changing again. Like, they are very much not even who they were when they launched PlayStation 4, when they were very humble and were about games and this is a gamer system, da, da, da. That PlayStation, I think, would have made a handheld and put it out, and then it would have been different. But now you already see it stepping back. Well, all right, E3 this year. No shoe, no Adam, nobody at, you know, we don't want any of those guys out there. Just put out the games, let them run, just show all the new games, AAA stuff only, no indies, no need for that. We'll do that at PSX somewhere else down the line, da, 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 da. And that's what you continue to see now, where, you know, PSX is that, but PSX doesn't talk about Vita, you know what I mean? Other than Gio holding it up and saying, and the Vita. Mm. Like, I just think that they're trying to make money, and I think that they need, as I'm sure we're about to get to here in a second with what's happening with PlayStation Now, like, they're moving in a way where they're trying to cut losses, which then makes you think they're focusing on PS4 and they're focusing in quotes on VR, and like what that means and what that looks like. I don't know yet.
We'll see. I think you're probably right. But number two, the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy is coming a lot sooner than we all thought. The collection of the three core Crash Bandicoot games from the PS1, reworked, enhanced, and redesigned for a new era, is coming to PlayStation 4 on June 30th. June 30th is an almost infamous faux release date in the industry, since it happens to be a final placeholder date commonly used for second quarter releases. But make no mistake about it, that's the actual date Activision and Sony have identified. I'm just throwing that out there because June 30th obviously is notorious.
Just like December 31st.
Yeah, it's like that date means nothing usually, but it
actually it's Tim's birthday, which is really weird.
That is weird.
This is like the game he wants the most.
Very strange. Number three, the NPD Group has revealed the best-selling games for the month of January 2017 across both retail channels and digital. NPD is now taking a new, much more interesting tact in giving us a glimpse at the 10 best-selling games in the States across all platforms and then breaking it down by platform, which is, this is kind of awesome. So this is in addition to their digital front now. So now NPD is actually very relevant again.
Okay.
It was becoming extremely irrelevant, and they've fixed that, which is good. NPD, a good Long Island company. Overall, these are the best-selling games for the month for January in the U.S. across retail and digital, regardless of platform. So this is platform agnostic. Number one is Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, then Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, Grand Theft Auto 5, Battlefield 1, NBA 2K17, Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue, Madden NFL 17, Watch Dogs 2, Overwatch, and FIFA 17. It's important to note digital sales are not counted for Overwatch there, indicating it likely charted far higher. On PS4 only, these were the top 10, and this is where things get interesting. This is both retail and digital combined.
Gravity Rush 2.
Nope. Resident Evil 7 Biohazard. Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue was number 2.
Dorks.
Call of Duty Infinite Warfare was 3. Grand Theft Auto 5. Battlefield 1. NBA 2K17. Madden NFL 17. Watch Dogs 2 at number 9. Tales of Berseria.
Woo!
And Final Fantasy 15 at number 10.
Okay.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I'm not saying that Tales sold anywhere near what Final Fantasy's poll was in November and December, but that's fucking interesting. To me, Final Fantasy 15 seems to be plummeting.
Yeah, people who wanted it got it.
Yeah, they got it all right. Number 4. NIS, everyone's favorite niche games publisher, has confirmed or reconfirmed, depending on the game in question, its vast commitment to both PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita in 2017 by announcing or reannouncing a batch of games that are coming to PS4, Vita, or both sometime this year. Most importantly, we have release date for Danganronpa V3 Killing Harmony, which will launch on both PS4 and Vita on September 26th.
You excited?
Yes.
You like Mamakuma?
Oh, I love Mamakuma. The company also confirmed that it's bringing action RPG East 8, Lacrimosa of Dana, to PlayStation 4 and Vita sometime in the fall of 2017. Fighting game Tohu Kabuto 5 Burst Battle is coming to PS4 and Vita in the summer. Strategy game Tokyo Tattoo Girls is coming to Vita at some point later this year. Operation Babel New Tokyo Legacy will launch on Vita on May 16th. And finally, Kladden Returns This is Sengoku has a release date on both PS4 and Vita of June 6th. Thanks, NIS. And seriously, thank you, NIS.
They support it.
You're doing it. You're doing it. Appreciate you. Number 5. If you use PlayStation Now somewhere other than your PS4 or PC, you'll only have about 6 more months until you're relegated only to those devices. Sony has revealed that PlayStation Now support will be discontinued for PlayStation 3, PlayStation Vita, PlayStation TV, Sony Bravia TVs released in 2013, 2014, and 2015, all applicable Sony Blu-ray devices, and all applicable Samsung TVs.
Damn.
As of August 15th, 2017. If you use PS Now on those devices and have no interest in or need to use it on PS4 or PC, be sure to investigate how this will affect you, when you will need to cancel your subscription, etc.
Kurz 4 says, Dear Colin and Greg, I have to admit I had asked a different question, but in light of the announcement that PlayStation Now support is being phased out on PS3 and Vita, I have come back and amended my own. What is the future of PlayStation Now? Is the acquisition of Gaikai / PS Now a weight around the legs of PlayStation, or will it form an integral part of future systems? Whilst I admit that 99% of the time backwards compatibility doesn't sell consoles, it can be seen as a great marketing coup for Microsoft that they can say X amount of games are available on our console and include thousands of Xbox 360 games. Sony paid approximately $380 million for the technology. Is this a sign that they have given up on streaming, or is it just them refocusing on a larger install base?
My assumption is that PlayStation Now was a massive mistake.
Which is crazy. We all thought it was going to be a big deal. This is the future. They were doing something.
Yeah, they spent $400 million or something on it. It's a drop in the hat for a company like Sony, but they probably lost on it. Here's why. It seemed novel all the way until last E3. Not actually 2 E3s ago, right?
Backwards compatibility? Yes. 2 E3s ago, yes.
Xbox One's much more elegant and forward thinking and consumer friendly above all else solution to backwards compatibility is the reason that PlayStation Now is going to be increasingly irrelevant, and why Sony really needs to figure out what the fuck they're doing with this. I do not still to this day understand. I am sure that it is a problem that has to do with the way the device runs and the cell processor and all that, but why can't you emulate a PS3 on PS4 and then let people play their PS3 games on it? Like, why? Like, that's what Microsoft did. So why can't that happen on the PlayStation 4? And I think when people saw that, I said at that E3 in 2015 that was the biggest moment of the show, because what it showed was that Sony was like in a corner tinkering like with a nuclear bomb. Very complicated. Years in the making and very finely tuned, very complicated. And then Microsoft's in the other corner being like, we'll just use a hand grenade. Here it is. It exists, and we don't need to worry about it in here, and it works. And Sony's over there tinkering, like splitting the atom. Meanwhile, Microsoft's like, here's a really elegant, straightforward solution that's going to garner us a lot of goodwill, and it has, and expand our fucking catalog exponentially, which it did. So I think that's the reason why they have to, but they're not getting ready for PlayStation now. They're focusing on those platforms, and I'm sure they're not going to let go of it. But they need to figure out a better way.
I mean, here, I think it's multifaceted, right? Is the way that I think in what we always talk about with PlayStation, this has been our argument about exclusives and why aren't they making more exclusives, putting more exclusives out. They didn't need to worry about exclusives. They're the best-selling console without the exclusives, right? They're the best-selling console now without backwards compatibility. And I'm sure they look at their PlayStation Now numbers and they're down, way down. It's not. I don't know people who use this. We got a few questions and the things of I rent them every so often, da, 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 da. I think that you're seeing people not use the platform, and then the platform is probably the people who want to make it better is being held back by the fact that it needs to work on all this shit, and the Vita is less powerful than a smartphone now, so it's like that doesn't work, we can't do, so you start cutting that away, you get it to where you focus on a PC and a PS4, maybe you can do something cool with it, maybe you can make it matter again, maybe you can make someone care about it, but in general I think it is the thing that, again, with the changing tides of PlayStation, like nobody gives a shit. You know what I mean? Like SharePlay was a big SharePlay and Gaikai and all these things people talked about during the PlayStation 4 presser. That was like awesome, right? Like that was all these great ideas we have and what's going to make PlayStation 4 popular. When the PlayStation 4 got out, what made it popular was people really like the fucking games. They're playing games on it. They don't care if there are games or third party or whatever. So cool. We don't have to worry about it. And like SharePlay eventually came and it wasn't a big deal. Like we thought it was going to be when we first saw it. And same thing with this PlayStation Now, Gaikai isn't a big deal but we thought it might be. And things changed. They all evolve.
Well, I think Sony was playing it from a number crunching, bean counting perspective, and I think Microsoft played it from a Pyrrhic perspective. And what ended up happening was that the move towards wasn't quite as the move Microsoft made wasn't as Pyrrhic as it seemed. Because, and the reason I say it's Pyrrhic is because they were clearly going to win the battle, but at what cost? Because doing this set like now is like, well, we don't need to make backwards. We don't need to make collections anymore. We can't make a Gears of War collection now because we don't have to. And we can't make money on that. We can just make, but someone already owns Gears on the Xbox 360, then they automatically own an Xbox One. So we're also not making any money there. In other words, it opens up the Xbox 360 marketplace in a very unique way to Xbox One players. But a lot of those players already own those Xbox 360 games. So this was a sunken cost for them. They did it to make themselves look good. And it was a very smart move.
And they needed that. They needed a win. They needed goodwill.
But Sony played it in a much more safer way, being like, well, why would we make Uncharted available on PS4 when we can sell it again? Why would we do all these things? And it's like, well, the die is cast, dude. Like, just like you have to look at some of the moves Sony has made as just being disastrous to the Xbox One's ability to succeed on the market, so too is Microsoft going to make decisions that will force Sony's hand. And this is one of those decisions. And this is one of those things where I'd be shocked if they weren't investigating how to make backwards compatibility a thing on PS4. Like it's ridiculous. You can't even play PS1 classics on a fucking PS4. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like it's just weird. Your PS1 classic library is isolated to the PS3 and the Vita. But again, they're being too fucking cute, you know, and that's one of the, and that's a problem where they have to get back down to brass tacks and be like, this, you can absolutely, I refuse to believe that you cannot emulate a PS3 on a PS4.
Well, this is interesting because it's it'll come up eventually, but you know, last week's show was like, you know, trophies are broken, you know, here's all the problem with trophies, blah blah blah. Kid wrote in. And he's like, you know, well, you know why they're broken. It's just because they don't care. The percentage of people who care about it are so small. Like, think about how many PS4s are out there. And it's not. And I'm like, well, yeah, we know that. We're just talking about it. We're talking to our audience about it. But that's true. And I bet it's the same thing here, right? Where they're like, we put out PlayStation Now, and this is the thing. But people aren't complaining about not having backwards compatibility. They're not using PlayStation Now, and they're not complaining in droves, in millions that are out there of like, they want to play fucking Infamous 2 on this thing. Nobody's saying it, so why should we fucking care?
Right, because I think that it's true, but I think, well, there's two things. I think that way more people care about trophies than you think, and that's your most hardcore fan base. So those are the people you want to play.
Don't get me wrong, I understand the argument, but I'm saying, again, this PlayStation that seems to be trending back a bit towards, all right, we're on top. What do we, you know, let's double down on what works.
In the main, you're right. Just because the thing is though that I think people don't want it because they know it's not possible. They're used to a Sony that literally just removed backwards compatibility from PS3. Like it could play PS2 games until it couldn't. They just were like, no, we're not going to do that anymore. Everyone's like, well, it's kind of weird, right? Like so ever since then, we're conditioned as the hardcore. See, this is the catch-22 is that the casual gamer doesn't care, or is not going to say anything, or doesn't know how to. They're screaming into a fucking pillow. They have no idea how to fucking. They have no idea how to fucking get their message out. But the hardcore audience that would say something has already complained about this many times.
Yeah.
But is so conditioned as a PlayStation fan that that's just not possible. In quotes, that they just aren't gonna bitch about something else, and they also understand that the things that they do bitch about in droves, Sony just ignores anyway. Like name changing, for instance, which people have been bitching about for 10 years. So Sony's very selective in this way, but my notion here is that backwards compatibility for Xbox fans didn't seem like a big deal until it happened. And then it was a really big deal because then it opened up this whole library and it showed you the possibilities. I think the same thing you would happen here is if Sony went and was like, you can play your PS3 games now on PS4 digital. You can't put your discs in and we don't know how to make that happen. It's not possible, but yeah, you can. The digital games are available.
Enjoy Journey again.
Suddenly,
even though Journey's out,
suddenly you have this library of awesome games. Suddenly people care again because they know that, oh, we can care now. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I think it's kind of like the scared cat. Like, you beat the cat enough, as I know you do. You like to beat cats.
I beat cats left and right.
Then the cat's always going to be afraid of you. Yeah. Like, it's the same. It's a similar thing where it's like, well, why scream about this? They don't fucking listen to anything we say anyway. So we've been screaming about literally all of this shit for years and they don't care.
Yeah,
clearly. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a conditioned response, in other words. Sure. I don't think it's necessarily...
It's a vote with your wallet thing, though, right? Yeah, we've been screaming about it, but we still buy the consoles. We still buy the games. We still buy the stuff. Same thing with Nintendo.
Yeah. We'll see how that all works out. Number six. Maybe Deep Down hasn't been abandoned after all. Capcom has filed a new trademark for the game spotted by website Gamatsu. That's only a little over a week old as of the time we're recording this podcast. The patent was filed on February 9th, seemingly as a failsafe redundancy, as the original Capcom filing from 2013 remains valid. Deep Down, a procedurally generated third-person dungeon-crawling RPG of some sort, was shown off during the PS4's initial reveal in February of 2013. Capcom hasn't spoken on the record about the game since 2015, however, and most assumptions were it had been abandoned or canceled. This seems to suggest otherwise. It is worth noting, I played Deep Down, like, years ago, before the PS4 even came out. So this is... I was in Japan, I think. And yeah, that was the story I told about how the woman that was showing the demo couldn't speak English, and I didn't know how to invert my controllers, and she was, like, laughing at me because I was so bad.
You ruined her perception of American gamers forever.
I know, she tells that story. So we'll see.
I think from
when I played it Deep Down, it was not good. So it was super clunky and boring, but it was also in Japanese. Number seven. Publisher Bethesda has confirmed that it will indeed do another E3 press conference this year. It's third overall and third in a row on Sunday, June 11th. It will air at 7 p.m. Pacific time that night and will, of course, be streamed for all over the internet. This is when we'll presumably get a look at what Machine Games and Tango Softworks are working on, though who knows what will ultimately be shown off. Also worth noting that Microsoft has moved and will be shown earlier that day, which I think is really smart. And that's what my column was right will be about this week. Because I haven't done one about Microsoft yet.
Fucking fanboy bullshit. You suck.
And I'm going to fucking ream them. And then the next week is going to be about how great PlayStation is. Actually, that might exactly be the sequence of events. We'll see. Number eight. GameSpot has relayed interesting information garnered from an ESA report titled Video Games in the 21st Century, the 2017 report. The information notes that the average salary of a developer at an average studio in the United States is $97,000 as of 2015, with average developers in California making an average of $113,000 a year. Game studios and developers currently work in all 50 states, including the capital, with publishers working out of 44 states. 65,678 people are employed by the gaming industry in the United States, adding $11.7 billion to the American GDP in 2015. I thought that was interesting.
That is good. That's good. That's some good facts, Colin. Remember those for me, okay?
You know I will. Number nine, a brief congratulations to developer Relogic and publisher 505 Games, as it has been revealed that Terraria, originally launched in 2011 on PC, has surpassed 20 million units sold.
Goddamn.
The 2D action sandbox game that's kind of like a side-scrolling Minecraft in a way came to PS3 in March of 2013, Vita in December of 2013, and PS4 in November of 2014. Apparently, lion's share of the sales have been in the last 18 months. That game is still crunching along, so congratulations to the millionaires of Relogic.
Never clicked.
Me neither. Number 10. It's a wrap-up.
Wrap it up, Colin!
Survival game Kona is coming to PS4 on March 17th. Puzzle platformer Snake Pass is coming to PS4 on March 28th via Sumo Digital, the studio responsible for Little Big Planet 3. First-person shooter Mother Gunship is coming to PS4. That can't be right. FPS Mother Gun? Is that right? No, that's not right. It's not an FPS. It's a real-time strategy. I'm going to fix that.
You're going to fix it in real time.
RTS, that's right. Mother Gunship is coming to PS4 at an undetermined time in the future. Free-to-play MMO Skyforge is coming to PS4 at some point this spring. Action-packed Starblood Arena is coming to PSVR on April 11th.
Boop, boop.
Action RPG Vikings Wolves of Midgard has a release date on PS4 and will launch on March 28th. And
we did a let's play that. That game was actually interesting.
Finally, developer Starbreeze has confirmed that Payday 3 is now in active development.
Starbreeze.
Though we're nowhere near seeing the final game. And that is all for the news.
Colin, you know I love rubbing my snake. So in the snake pass seems pretty goddamn interesting with your physics and your snakes and your fucking limp snakes. Mm. But if I want to know what came to mom and grop shops this week, where would I go?
You go to the official upcoming list of PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, PlayStation VR, PlayStation Vita, sometimes PSP software, by the kind of funny co-founder. A Pixel story. comes to PlayStation 4 digitally. It's out the 24th, so it is a Friday release. In a world hidden deep inside your computer, an unlikely hero is about to appear. I'm sorry, not reappear. A tale of platforms and perils, of magical teleporting hats and sarcastic software, of thieving seagulls and maniacal operators. It's no fairy tale. It's a pixel story.
Okay. There's a lot of words in that one.
Yeah. ACA Neo Geo Neo Turf Masters comes to PlayStation 4 digital out the 23rd, so that is a Wednesday release. Released by SNK in 1996, players can choose from a total of six golfers with different abilities and play on courses located around the world, such as Australia or Germany.
Oh, wow. I was just in Australia.
Players can test out their golf game skills against friends with a game mode such as stroke play and match play.
Colin, you and I play stroke play all the time at home.
Stroke play 2-3 times a day. Berserk and the Band of the Hawk comes to PlayStation 4 digital and retail. We actually got, first of all, the spelling error.
We have a copy.
Way to go, Clements.
Whoa!
Also, we got the digital copies. I haven't played it. Behold the fierce blend of warriors and berserk. In a Band of the Hawk, the action of cutting through hundreds of enemies, fundamental to the warrior series, is fused together with the dark and gruesome atmosphere of the world of Berserk, making various heretofore unseen acts possible.
What the fuck?
All right, Middle English. Such as using a giant man-sized sword to cut enemies in half, as well as smash or send them flying with the slash and smash actions. Is this an Omega Force game?
I don't. I'm confused.
Otherwise, why would they invoke? I mean, whatever. Chime Sharp comes to PlayStation 4 digital. Place pieces, paint the board, make music. Chime Sharp is a sequel to 2009's Charm, a musical puzzle game with an addictive ambient heartbeat. You tessellate shapes to cover a grid, while a beatline reads those shapes as notes. As you cover the board, the music builds to a beautiful crescendo of your own design. I remember Chime. I feel like I might have reviewed it, but I don't think that's true. Clouds and Sheep 2.
Say you did. Who cares?
That's a good point. Comes to PlayStation 4 digital. Feed them, play with them, and they'll love you back. Solve countless quests and fulfill your woolly friend's needs. Plant grass, flowers, trees, and decorate different pastures to make them even more beautiful. Control the clouds and make it rain, or protect your flock from dangerous thunder. Provide your sheep with food, accessories, toys, and more, and style them with funny costumes. Let's become the best shepherd in the world.
Let's do it.
Malicious Fallen, oh Jesus, comes to PlayStation 4 digital.
Why?
Malicious on PS3 was fucking terrible. When the forces of ultimate evil are unleashed on the world, only the spirit vessel can hope to subdue them. Malicious Fallen includes the complete story so far and adds two brand new chapters, Pursuit and Demise. Experience the thrilling finale of Malicious Saga, remastered, enhanced, and expanded for PS4. Malicious was this game on PS3 where you only fought bosses, and it was so fucking boring. Mervels, a VR adventure, comes to PSVR digital. With merely a sword and a few coins, your quest begins in Mervel countryside. The pages of the Great Mervel book have been scattered throughout the land, and the dark sorceress Balazar the Evil has risen from the shadows. It's up to one brave hero to collect the lost pages, rebind the Great Book, and defeat Balazar once and for all. Will that Mervel be you?
We get it. The goddamn game is called Mervel. Fuck.
Night in the Woods finally comes out, the PlayStation 4 digital. College dropout May Borowski returns home to a crumbling former mining town of Possum Springs, seeking to resume her aimless former life and reconnect with the friend she left behind. But things aren't the same. Home seems different now, and her friends have grown and changed. Leaves are falling, and the wind is growing colder. Strange things are happening as the light fades, and there's something in the woods.
Now, A Night in the Woods.
Yeah.
This is the one where you're playing around as your animals, right? Okay. But it's narrative, right? Like somebody tried it. I think the developers or the PRP were like, you like Gone Home, you might like this game. Is that correct? Am I talking about that one?
I don't remember them saying that to me, but
okay.
The game you're describing sounds.
All right, cool. Yeah, I heard about that one forever ago. It's finally coming though. Okay.
Psychonauts and the Rhombus of Ruin comes to PS4, PSVR rather, digital. Psychonauts and the Rhombus of Ruin is an all-new virtual reality adventure that takes players back into the mysterious and paranormal world of the Psychonauts for the first time in more than 10 years. Once again, players will assume the role of Raz, an intrepid young psychic and now fully fledged member of the Psychonauts, an elite group of international psychic secret agents.
If you want to know more about Psychonauts, you can catch Tim Schafer over on the Kind of Funny Games cast, where he talks about if making Kinect games was a mistake, if that's going to happen with PlayStation VR. And we talk about a lot of people who've quit his company.
I'll give it up to Double Fine. They make a lot of games, and they go to places that they probably should have never gone, and they are still here.
Artists.
It's very interesting. Yeah. They still exist.
Yeah.
They should have been killed 5 times based on some of the decisions they made, but they're so fucking
good.
That's
the question I straight up asked him. I'm like, was like, all the Kinect games you made, were they successes by any stretch of the imagination, like by money or by sales?
What do you say?
No and no. He's very honest. It's a great conversation. It's a success. He talks about, letting his team grow and letting them do things and try different, technologies.
Right. They're a very interesting studio to me because I have no idea. And I don't mean any disrespect. They make great games, but I'm like, how Are you still in here? Like, they must make wise investments elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Typo Man comes to PlayStation 4 Digital. Hey. Typo Man is a 2D puzzle platformer. You slip into the role of a character made of letters, struggling to make your way through a dark and hostile world. Despite your small stature, you have a powerful gift. You can crack words to alter your environment. But choose your words wisely. They can either be a blessing or a curse. Vaccine comes to PlayStation 4 Digital. Vaccine is a new approach on survival horror. It says horror, by the way. Inspired by those of the 90s. You can choose between the two members of a special biohazard rapid response team, each starting with their own unique abilities. They are trapped in a strange house populated by dangerous mutated creatures. They will have to find a vaccine for another team member who is infected with a deadly virus.
Speaking of vaccines, you know what game needs to come back is Trauma Center. We need more trauma centers. Remember how good Trauma Center was?
I thought you were going to say, like, I have polio or something. I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
Speaking of vaccines, Colin, I caught polio since we last talked.
Yeah, I remember Trauma Center. Yeah.
That's good.
Trauma Center, the original Trauma Center was a Wii launch game, wasn't it?
I only remember. I thought it was a DS, and then it
Came the Wii. I'm thinking of one of those medical games that was a Wii launch game.
No, there was a Wii Trauma Center that came out. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if it was a launch.
Warhammer 40K Death Watch comes to PlayStation 4 Digital. It's out the 24th, so that is a Thursday release. Death Watch is a turn-based strategy game set on the edge of Imperial space where your space marines will engage the Tyranids. I guess that's right. In a series of tactical engagements. I'm not nearly nerdy enough to know about Warhammer. From your war-ravaged cities to the insides of Tyranid bioships, your mission will see your kill team rise in strength and skill as you face ever greater threats and peril. They're coming at me now. They're coming after me because I said I wasn't nerdy enough.
The Warhammer police.
Sir, you're nerdy enough. I remember that Anthony Gallegos told the story about how he used to paint Warhammer figures in his garage, and then someone opened the garage once when he was in there, and it was like girls or something there, and he like quickly hid all of his Warhammer figures. Like, sounds about right. Warhammer Quest comes to PlayStation 4 Digital. Lead your group of brave adventurers through the perilous dungeons of the Warhammer world in search of wealth and glory. Level up your party of heroes, loot weapons, armor, and mysterious artifacts from full-on enemies. Crush orcs, goblins, trolls, and more ferocious enemies. I know, I don't want to talk about it either. What lurks in the darkness, only the mightiest warriors will survive.
The bullshit siren's going off.
Interesting seeing Warhammer games come out. I feel like Warhammer games just stopped after THQ went under.
Yeah. They should have taken the hint.
They had that third-person shooter that some people actually liked. I can't remember what it was called, the Warhammer game.
I know what you're talking about.
That I'll never remember the name of because I don't really give a fuck.
Sure.
The final game that comes to PlayStation 4 is one that I'm very excited about that I reached out for a code for today. East Origin comes to PlayStation 4 Digital. Following a devastating demonic invasion, the twin goddesses use their magic to bring the inhabitants of legendary East safely into the sky. While the demons work to construct Devil's Tower and reach the humans' new abode, the goddesses disappear. As a mighty warrior or a cunning mage, you must seek the goddesses in Devil's Tower with your swordsmanship and spells. Can you banish evil from the land of your ancestors?
Oh, I can. Don't worry about it.
East Origin is a prequel to all the East games, even to East 1. So I'm looking forward to playing that, and that's on the news that East 8 obviously coming out in the fall.
As a proud Mervin, I can tell you I can vanish and I can banish.
New IDs, Celsita.
I did. Yeah, that was a good Vita game.
I'm disappointed that one's not coming out to PS Vita. Or it might be, but it's not day and date. I just need something else to play.
On the Vita? Or just in general?
Just kind of generally.
Okay.
I want to play Sniper Elite 4, so I might get back to that. But and Neo, I want to get back to that. Well, we're going to get Mass Effect soon, I assume.
I was going
to
say, yeah. Well, that's coming up eventually. You got that other game that's embargoed.
That's true. We've had that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when the one embargo game arrives, and then the next day Horizon arrives. I'm like, fuck. And your embargo is so much closer.
It's kind of crazy how early we got that game.
Yeah.
Okay. Not Horizon, the other one. That's it for the games. I would say pick of the week should probably be East. I don't really know anything else about
it. Yeah, Night in the Woods sounds interesting, but I don't know enough about it to tell you anything about it. Do you have what time is it?
7:04.
Wrong, it's trophy time, Colin.
Whoa.
What's happening in the world?
That got me. That's a rare win on your part.
Yeah.
You're like the Colorado Avalanche of the PlayStation world. Once in a while. Jeremy Roenick was never on the Colorado Avalanche. Well, there aren't many new games.
Oh, he went Phoenix? Is that where he went after Chicago? He went somewhere after Chicago.
He went to the Coyotes.
Phoenix.
Which was weird. They had those awful Indian inspired.
No, they don't like that.
I wanted one for a while when Nikolai Hobby-Bulin played on the Coyotes. I asked for a Nikolai Hobby-Bulin jersey and mercifully I asked for three jerseys and mercifully I only got the Avalanche jersey that I asked for. I didn't get the that fucking hideous monstrosity. Okay,
now how does that work out? You can like other hockey teams?
Oh, back in the day, I was so into hockey. I had. When I was a kid in the 90s, I had probably more than half of the NHL's jerseys.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
I used to just wear them to school.
Sure. Okay.
You know, Oilers and the Sharks and the
Penguins. Did you ever have a Whalers one?
No, I never had a Whalers jersey. It wasn't as cool to have a Whalers jersey. I always wanted a Winnipeg Jets jersey, but the old Winnipeg Jets jersey.
For Chris Jericho.
I want a gold, exactly. I want a golden seal jersey, the old California team from the 70s.
Okay.
They only played for like 2 years. Cleveland Barons. I would love to get like the rare NHL teams that are like, who the fuck are the Cleveland Barons? The Colorado Rockies were a hockey team. They moved to New Jersey, became the New Jersey Devils in 1982.
So, we're the Devils.
The Devils. Okay.
You know what Seinfeld line I've been thinking about a lot lately? Mm. That great one where when he surprises his parents and his mom's like, come on, something always exciting happens when Jerry visits. It's like the best almost break of a fourth wall ever. Because their life, when he's not there, nothing's happening. Nothing happens. But whenever he comes, some crazy zany adventure happens.
Everyone hates them at their
Boca del Vista.
Okay, only two games worth talking about here. East Origins trophies are up. 15 bronze, 9 silver, 6 gold, and a platinum. Seems like Nightmare difficulty is going to be necessary for you to get the platinum trophy in the game, since there's multiple ones tied to that. It's a bunch of trophies for story-related things. I saw a spelling error in here, I thought. But yeah, there it is. Mass Murderer. There's a silver trophy for Mass Murderer. Kill 10,000 enemies. Enemies, E-N-N-E-M-I-E-S. Mm. Everyone's really paying attention at Sony. Keep it up, guys.
That's what happens when you write directly into the Excel sheet. I know how this happens. You can't do that. You got to write somewhere else.
Keep it up, Sony. You guys are really on the ball over there on PSN. For Psychonauts,
yeah.
In the Rhombus of Ruin, 9 bronze, 2 silver, 1 gold, and 0 platinum. Rescue Mila, Rescue Lily, Rescue Sasha. So all these trophies tied to that. The big thing I want to talk about here that I was disappointed about was that there is no platinum, indicating that the game is not long enough. Although, to be fair, Double Fine often shits the bed with its trophies if you haven't been paying very close attention. So
I want to say I asked Tim point blank what the runtime for Psychonauts was, and it's on the Gamescast, so somebody can listen to that and double check me. But I want to say he said 4 hours.
That's not long enough for a platinum. I know it is for you. You wanted a platinum and Gone Home, which can be 90 seconds. So
yeah, I know. I like how you bring that up. Like you could do it. You've never heard of Gone Home and you could beat it in 90 seconds. You fucking have to know exactly where to go and what to do, you piece of shit.
But you can.
You can. Yes. It doesn't matter though.
That's it for trophy time. Nothing too interesting. We're obviously, I want to speak. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, on the next episode. Horizons trophies. We know what they are. Sony provided those trophies for me. Mm. And I sent them to Greg so we can kind of look at them. But they're not, I don't think that's leaked yet.
Somebody tweeted us right before this show that they did up? Leak. Yeah. It's still got the hidden stuff. It's not an extra phase.
Oh,
it's not like actually out, but the list is out. Yeah, I know.
I'll leave right now.
I haven't spread it. This is a good point for this too. I need, cause this is one of those times I'm gonna need your friendship. Because I'm hosting the Dice Awards this week. Thursday night, we'll have them over on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Huh?
You want me to sync them for
exactly. But the problem is, I'll have Kevin do the unit here. I can do my primary
spread them all out.
But in my bedroom, on the gray one, you have to do it.
Well, the reason that I'm not even going to play it at my house, like I'm going home tonight for the first time in like 2 weeks. I'll just play something else because they're all tied to Aaron's PS4.
Yeah.
And the problem here is that I usually wouldn't care, but I played Resident Evil 7 across both consoles, and then I have all this fucked up trophy. Like the trophy's sunk fine, but like there's all this weird shit. I'm like, it doesn't make sense. I got this trophy before this trophy. It bothers the OCD in me.
Which I think because it goes by where you sync it first, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I just can't play.
Well, I do have two questions about Horizon trophies. That aren't like spoilery, and we don't need to know them all. Jonathan wrote in and said, how are the trophies? I think it's a great trophy list. Like I said, I'm going to platinum it here probably at 45 hours. And I'm sure once it's out and you have guides and stuff like that, you'll be able to do it quicker than I did.
It's a platinum you won't even need a guide for, I assume, unless there's something weird in there that I'm not.
Well, if you just want it like, hey, where can I farm this or what can I do this? You know what I mean? And then Alex said, are the trophies missable or difficulty related? They are not. Knock on wood, there's nothing that's been missable. And
Trophy, no, nothing. That's what I really wanted to, you know, I reached out to our friends at Sony and I was like, can I see the list? And they went to Gorilla and asked and they sent it to me because I literally just wanted to see if I should play it on hard or not.
You and I really need to talk more because what I did is I DM'd Gorilla and I was like talking to them like, hey, is it difficulty or can I just jump in? Like, just jump in. I'm like, thanks. Went off and had fun.
It's good because Killzone trophy lists are fucking an abomination. It's just a collection of abominations. And so I was a little nervous.
Afraid it was going to be, play it and we'll unlock new game plus difficulty. And I'm like, I don't want to, don't get me wrong, the game's great, but I hate replaying stuff over and over again. Continuing with trophy time, Azza08 wrote in to set us straight. As many people did, but this is the first one to happen. This is Aron Walters. Hey guys.
Oh, wait. Before you even read it, is this about the trophies with Back to the Future?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I was wrong.
Hey guys, just thought I would give you guys a heads up. Last week on PS I Love You, you said you could not think of a game that was digital episodic but had no platinum, and then I'm sorry, that was digital that had no platinum, then came to retail and had a platinum. Back to the Future on PS3 had no platinum when it was digital, but had one when it came out on the disc.
There was a different example. Back to the Future is the only one in that letter that he used.
Yeah.
There was
there was like a bunch of kids who wrote in about
this.
There's
another one, though, that I was like, oh, that I actually remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, what was it?
Fuck my God goat ass.
Damn it. Fuck me in the goat ass. I don't remember.
You think about it.
It doesn't really remember. It really honestly doesn't matter.
A different Aaron wrote in for the segment that we like to do on Trophy Time called "This Trophy Can Go Fuck Itself." The game, Grand Theft Auto Vice City. The trophy, take the cannoli. The description, earn the Godfather criminal rating. There is no way to explain this trophy without a fairly long explanation, so get ready for a real journey. I promise it's worth it. Late last year, I decided to download Grand Theft Auto the Trilogy on PSN. Being a longtime GTA fan, I was excited to sit down and play through all three games for a huge nostalgia trip. I also figured I'd go for the platinum trophies in all three games. At first glance, the trophy list didn't seem too bad. I played through all of GTA 3 and got the platinum pretty easily. Then I moved on to Vice City. Again, I completed the game and had obtained just about every trophy when I ran into the son of a bitch trophy known as Take the Cannoli. This trophy requires you to achieve a certain criminal rating in the game. Your criminal rating is based on many of your stats in the game. You raise it by simply causing mayhem, completing missions, and other various activities. In GTA 3, I finished the game, and most of the trophies, with a rating of about 3,500. The trophy in GTA 3 required a rating of 5,000. No problem. I just had to cause a small bit of extra chaos. In Vice City, I completed the game, and most of its trophies, with a rating of, again, around 3,500. I assume Take the Cannoli would require a score of 5,000, just like GTA 3. Nope! Strap in for this reveal. Take the Cannoli requires the player to achieve a criminal rating of 1 million. Yes, you read that correctly. 1 million. I couldn't believe it. I searched the internet hoping to find this trophy was ridiculous as it seemed. Unfortunately, it was a cruel joke that it was the cruel joke that it seemed. And there was pretty much no way of doing it legitimately. Playing the game like a normal person actually makes it nearly impossible to do legitimately because of how the stats affect scores. I was going to have to cheat in order to get the trophy and my platinum. I wanted to quit, but I was determined to get my platinum. I wasn't about to let this one sick joke ruin everything for me. So I looked up guides for cheating my way to victory. The method I chose required
like a Steinbeck novel.
I know, required me to get 7 helicopters in place, half in a save garage and the other half on a roof of a building the garage was in. Then, while standing in a specific spot on the roof, I had to put in the blow up all cars cheat code. Doing this raised my criminal rating by 210 points each time. Over the course of 4 to 5 hours, I had to input the cheat code a minimum of 4,700 times. Plus, I had to get new helicopters, reset the difficulty and the glitch every time. After seeing my criminal rating pass the 1 million mark, the trophy didn't pop. I thought the game was messed up and didn't give me the trophy. I felt broken inside. After searching some more online, I find out I had to also obtain $10 million. Luckily, I found a very easy method for cash, but eventually the trophy and my platinum popped. I'm not sure if it was dedication or a sign of insanity. Even though I got the trophy, I can say without a doubt that this trophy can go fuck itself.
Thank you, JD Salinger.
Thank you for doing what you do and who you are, Aaron. Jesus Christ, Aaron. You should have given up. That was not worth it.
It's like, it was like when I had all the trophies in Titanfall 2, except for that one on the wall. I'm like, no,
I'm not going to do this.
Not a prayer. Even a little bit of a prayer that happening.
Yeah, just walk away, man. You didn't have to do that. You could have played other games.
That was San Andreas?
Vice City,
okay.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was thinking recently about, I have those games, all three of my downloaded them.
Yeah.
I haven't played GTA 3 since high school. It would be fun to just go back and relive those things, but man, they must be so bad.
Yeah, they're still tanky. And yeah, they can't.
Are they tanky?
No, it's not tanky. You can't spin the camera. There's something that's like so...
I was like, I don't remember the tank controls.
It's something, yeah, I think it's this. I remember when they came out, the camera fucks it. It was really fucked up and nobody could wrap their head around it. Jumping into reader mail. Thank you to Jericho for compiling it. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, to be part of the show, you go to kindoffunny.com/PSQ, just like Weasel Prick did. Hey, guys. Lately, I find myself losing my interest in video games because I can't relate to the main character. My main issue is the sudden explosion of female protagonists. I love The Last of Us and have been waiting for the sequel forever. Seeing as how Ellie is now the main playable character, I find myself uninterested in playing the game. I also think Horizon Zero Dawn looks like it can be a really great game, but I don't want to give it a chance due to the fact that the main character is a female. I'm pretty sure there are way more men playing video games than compared to women, and I don't understand why developers are moving this direction. What are your thoughts on this? And wouldn't it be more profitable for developers if they appeal to a male audience? How are Tomb Raider sales compared to other games in the genre that have a male protagonist? I am not sexist. I just want to relate to my games. Keep up your great work, and don't laugh at my name, Weasel Prick.
It's a little bit of a bizarre one.
Yeah, there's a lot to laugh at, I think, in your question, Weasel Prick. And the name is not even the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to come in and, you know, whatever, but I mean, why are you so hung up on it being a woman? Like, that's not even the point. Like, when you talk about Ellie, when you talk about Aloy, like, Aloy's got to, you'll find out when you play it, as you should, because the game's awesome. I'm pointing where it was during the review. It's not here. Aloy's got a bunch of problems, and being a woman really isn't one of them. That, and it's not like that's shoved down your throat that that's a big thing for her. It's actually not even a point of the game.
She has 99 problems, and being a bitch ain't one.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, I'm sorry, like, if I triggered anyone.
I feel like, and I don't know anything about you or where you're coming from or anything else. I feel like you're just too hung up on gender. Like, for me, connecting to a game is about the emotions and what the character's going through. Yeah,
I never, ever understood this line of thinking. And this is a line of thinking that is not even remotely pervasive, so we don't have to spend too much time on it. But why are people playing, like, it's like saying, like, Atlas Shrugged is one of my favorite books, right? Mm. The protagonist is female. That would be like me saying, like, I can't relate to Taggart because she's a woman. The fuck does that mean? Like, it's a story. It's not you. Why are you trying? I can't relate to anything that's going on Horizon. I have a newsflash for you. Whether Aloy was male or female, you couldn't relate to what is going on in Horizon.
We've all had to kill a machine that looks like a panther and take out its heart and use it to craft a fucking weapon.
It's so weird to me that like, I understand that people think there are, you know, you can have the conversation of like, are there too many females? Are people trying to cater? You know,
are they doing it because it's a movement? Is it?
Yeah, exactly.
Thing?
And I agree. You know, I always thought the statistic like that was going around for a while, being like, did you know that, you know, half of gamers are female? I'm like, no, they're not. Like, no, they're not. Like, that's not even remotely true.
You're talking,
you
know, about these GDC stats that come out, exactly, that are compiling in cell phone games.
It's
and
like
all
ridiculous. It's like a totally ridiculous thing. But of course, that's not true. Maybe a quarter of the console audience is female, if at most, maybe. But that doesn't matter, because there are valuable stories to be told and valuable protagonists from which perspectives you can play, regardless of if they're male, female, black, white, whatever, Chinese. It doesn't matter. So I never really understood this particular, you know, this particular thing where if you're customizing a character, then I understand playing as, like, I always play as a male shepherd. I'm like, well, that's who I'm trying to be. I'm making the choices and whatever. But in games that are more detached, it's like, I'm not playing Neo to relate to the experience of a white man in Japan, which is what the whole fucking game's about. Like, who cares? It's a video game. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's a story you're enjoying. Yeah.
And if you're that limited, then you can't enjoy most TV shows. You can't enjoy, and I'm not saying because they're women. I'm saying, like, how can you possibly relate to Holloway's character on Colony? Like, you weren't an FBI agent or an Army Ranger, so you can't possibly enjoy Colony. You can't possibly enjoy, fucking anything. If you're trying to look at it through our perspective,
I mean, even from that perspective, like, it comes, that's what he needs from gender. So if he's playing, like, if he's as a white man, if I'm playing a game as a black guy, am I suddenly like, oh, I can't relate to this? We both have dicks, but I don't know anything about that.
It's just that's a bizarre one.
Yeah,
that's all I'll say about that. It's a truly bizarre one.
I think you need to get over it. Night Mist wrote in and said, "Hello, Greg and Colin. Last week, Colin said Gravity Rush 2 probably bombed because of low downloadable sales, and I thought I would chime in as someone who rents games. I use Gamefly, and I'm currently sending back Dragon Quest Builders, a game I loved, for Gravity Rush 2, a game I think I will enjoy. As a consumer, I am paying for a legal service to play these games, but if I really enjoy it, then I would like it to do well financially and possibly get a sequel. My question to you is this. Is renting good games hurting the bottom line? If renting is a problem, then why is it allowed to exist? If renting isn't a problem, then why can't I rent PlayStation 4 games on PS Now, a service that I've also enjoyed? Thanks, Nightmist."
I'm years past even fighting this fight anymore. This was a thing that we kind of died on, or I tried to die on, and there's many, many hills I tried to die on in the past.
You are always trying to die. It's weird.
I'm not long for this world.
Bleeding heart liberal.
The thing about renting games, so, I mean, at brass tacks, the thing about renting games and the reason why it's not illegal, I mean, this was a fight that was fought with VHSs and video games in the 80s. It's a licensing issue. You buy the license, and so Gamefly technically owns the license to that game and can do what it wants with it as long as it's a physical version of the game. I'm glad that question wasn't going in the direction I thought it was going in, because that would have been really bad, which was, like, I rent these games, and so isn't that not reflected on that? I would have been like, that would be the same for every game in existence, so you're all treated the same way. Thankfully, the question didn't go there. I don't think there's anything wrong with renting. I think renting is becoming super, super, super niche. So I don't think it has anything to do with the bottom line at all. It was way more injurious 10 years ago. It was especially way more injurious 20 or 30 years ago.
This is a callback, I think, even to last week's, one of the things from last week where people were talking, or maybe 2 weeks ago, where they're talking about Gravity Rush and like, you know, not buying it on day one, waiting for reviews, doing all this different stuff. But then does that hurt the sales? Does that not send the message that you want more of this game, of these characters and these different things? I think when you start talking about that, the percentage of people who are renting, the percentage of people who are waiting, the percentage of people who are going to get it for a gift is so small that it really, I don't think this one guy, right? That's not like the backbreaker sales. Like the Gamefly people renting it, I don't think are the ones where they're like, well, if only those few hundred people, few thousand people would have bought that Gravity Rush 2, we'd be in a different state. I think Gravity Rush 2 is just a different case. It needs, you know, more people in general. It needs to just be these business realities for a company like Sony.
I'm looking up something real quick. I just want to, it'll take me just one moment.
No, it's fine. I'll sing the Doogie Howser song while you type.
Yes. Okay. So, so this is damning. This is really damning stuff for Gravity Rush's 2 performance, because I thought this was true. Gravity Rush 2 was a Friday release, if I remember correctly. Let me just verify. I think it came out the 20th. Okay. So this is how bad Gravity Rush 2 did.
Lay it on me.
Gravity Rush 2 came out the 20th of January. Tales of Berseria came out the 24th of January. So it had four fewer days on the market, and was number 9 in the PS4 only MPD charts, where Gravity Rush 2 wasn't. So I don't want to hear any more conjecture whatsoever about that game, that it did anything less than fucking nothing on the market. I just want to throw that out there. Tales of Berseria is about as a niche as a role-playing game as you could possibly get. Number 9. Gravity Rush 2 with 4 more days on the market, PS4 exclusive, with some Sony push behind it, not charting at all. Because I know some people were upset about that or whatever, and I'm like, guys, it's in the data. Like, just... it's there. It doesn't mean the game was bad. It doesn't mean you're wrong for enjoying it. It does mean you should say goodbye to Gravity Rush.
No, Cat. We loved you. We tried to make it happen in All-Stars. That was another fight we lost, though. Fucking All-Stars. Saddest day of the life. Colin, you ready to meet your new best friend?
Yes.
This comes from Morgan. That's not his PlayStation Network name. Of course, this is where I read one of your messages from kindoffunny.com/PSQ, where you've asked to be... that's not for PSQ. Just go to kindoffunny.com/forms. Where you want to be a best friend, then you, the other best friend, send messages and friend requests and everybody's happy. Morgan writes in and says, "Hey Greg, Colin, and all the best friends. This might be a little long, so pack a lunch. Around 6 years ago now, I lost my best friend unexpectedly and tragically in an accident. He and I would always play games together, mainly COD on Xbox 360. And he was one of the only people in my life that I could share this passion with. When he passed, gaming died as well. I stopped playing games and reading comics. Hell, I stopped doing anything at all until one random day I was on YouTube and stumbled across 4 idiots in a room talking about video games, hating mustard, and K-pop. I don't really believe in God or things like that, but man, something or someone was looking out for me that day. You guys reinvigorated my love and passion for games and nerd culture and really talked me off the ledge. I owe a great deal to my family for helping me through that time, but I also owe so much to you guys whilst you were at IGN and now Kind of Funny. As always, wanted to write in back then, but never had the courage to. But I finally thought I would, as I need you guys and best friends more than ever. Another friend of mine of 20 years has been recently diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer at the age of 30, and I know you will get me through this as well. Currently, I am playing Neo and would love some best friends to help out with the times when the times get tough. And I hope it will also encourage me to broaden my game library and try new things. My PSN name is I'm going to read it all and then describe how he writes it, because he says in parentheses, please, shoot, let us change our names. It's Kal-El Pliskin. Kal, like, you know, we're talking about Superman. Kal-El, obviously. Kal-El_Pliskin. Pliskin. I don't know where I would be or what I would have done without you guys in my life. Love, Morgan. P.S. If you ever come back to Australia, make sure you come to Melbourne. Sydney sucks balls. Morgan, get the fuck off your couch and meet us halfway. Fucking flew all these hours over there. Just go to Sydney for a fucking weekend. Say hi.
Somewhere halfway in the middle Pacific Ocean, but that's, first of all, it's a sad story.
And we love you very much.
And you escaped ridicule because of the sad story by putting both a dash and an underscore in your name, which is virtually unprecedented.
Now, for the record, though, Kal-El should be hyphenated. So, I mean, he's on the money there.
That's fine, but you can't put a dash and an underscore.
Why he's trying to shove together Pliskin in there? It's like, come on, are you doing comics? Are we doing Snake Pliskin, or are we doing Pliskin for Metal Gear? Come on, you know, just don't mix it all up. Colin, ready for this week's Forgotten PlayStation game? This is where one of you writes into kindoffunny.com/PSQ, tells us a game that doesn't get enough love, and we give the love here. This one comes from Salky. Salky says, hey, guys, love the issue. I listen to almost every episode. What the fuck that means? I love the issue.
All right.
I have a submission for PlayStation Forgotten Game. Also not the fucking title of the segment. My Forgotten Game is actually a PlayStation 4 game, not a remake. PlanetSide 2 has had me enthralled more than any online FPS since Team Fortress 2. Sure, it has some technical issues, but it's free to play and is doing something no other game out there is attempting. Massive battles of over 100 versus 100 players with large armor and air battles going on layered on top of infantry flights. What draws you in is the supersized battle. Then you find a good outfit, aka clan, and it gets even better. Sadly, the PlayStation community is not taking advantage of this really awesome, and did I mention free game? We've been dropping 16 coordinated players on a fight between two other teams and royally screwing them up. Imagine, if you will, a Battlefield 1 match between two teams going about their business. Then a third team comes out of nowhere, unexpectedly lands on a control point, and starts shooting things. Cracks me up every time. Predacons Forever, Sulky. I assume that's some kind of fucking PlanetSide 2 garbage.
It's shocking that a free-to-play game's not doing well on PlayStation. That's not unheard of at all. Doesn't matter.
What is there to say about PlanetSide 2 that hasn't been said about the Battlefield?
Afghanistan.
PSN's worst name of the week is a segment we do here because, of course, Shuhei Yoshida won't let you change your name because he hates you. So you write in with your bad PSN name or bad PSN names you've seen, and then we guilt him. We just guilt him every day. This one comes from Origami RIP 789, who says, "So I was playing Rainbow Six Siege with my friends when I saw the name of this gentleman, Fat Clip Flaps. Fat Clip Faps. Flaps. Fat Clip Clip Falaps." You understand what I'm trying to say there? Yes. I'm trying to say fat clit, like a clitoris.
Like a fat clit.
Flaps.
Like an old beat up clit.
Yes.
And an old beat up
vagina. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been PSI Love You XOXO episode 75. Thank you for joining us. Remember, PSI Love You XOXO is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast. So go there, subscribe to the YouTube channels, listen to the other shows, watch the other content. Then, remember, it posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, rain or shine, on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe, unless I forget to publish it because SoundCloud doesn't let me auto-publish, and I've been fucking it up bad lately. But you guys tweet me, and then I remember to do it. But you should just go watch the YouTube video because it's easier for me. Or you should all yell at SoundCloud. But, you know, whatever.
Ah, like, by God! By God, she's on the moon! Aloy's fighting dinosaurs on the moon!
Every episode of PSI Love You XOXO ends in a song in a segment we call Singing a Shuhei. This is where one of you talented motherfuckers goes to kindoffunny.com/PSM, gives me an MP3 that I play at the end of our MP3. Don't make me buy it. I hate doing that. Gives me a YouTube link I annotate to from our YouTube link.
No one's making you do anything. If someone's like, you gotta buy it, then I'm not like doing
it. I need
it.
To support. And here's what's getting it. I figured it out finally. Is that it's all these fucking Australians and Europeans. You go to SoundCloud, name your own price. A zero is fine. I put in zero and it's like, well, because they're foreign, you have to give them at least 40 cents.
Can we all agree that if an asteroid had ever hit Earth, we hope it hits Europe? Because, like, I just feel like that's kind of the obvious place. Like, we all kind of want the asteroid.
Like Resistance.
To land.
Well, I mean, not,
that was a Tunguska, man. That was a little thing. I'm talking about a meteor that's going to, like, wipe the fucking continent out.
You want to take out Europe?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Prince Charles?
He's had his chance.
It's true. He did have his chance. This one comes from Blessing Jr. Blessing Jr. wrote in and said, "Hey, Greg and Colin. Singing to Shuhei is too dang white, JK. But I do think you guys could use more of a hip-hop feel to end the show. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Blessing, and I like to create rap beats. One of my dreams is to produce beats for an artist like Megaran. My specialty is recreating video game soundtracks as rap instrumentals. This song, Joel's Guitar from The Last of Us, is my latest. It's a remix of The Last of Us' main theme. I have more like it on my YouTube channel and my Bandcamp page, blessingjr.bandcamp.com. Hope you enjoy. P.S. I love you. XOXO. Blessing Jr., you need no introduction. I've seen you around the comments. Don't worry about that. I loved your song, and that's why we're going to play it now.
Sorry, Europeans. We don't want the asteroid to land on here. We would actually want it to land on Australia.
Oh, definitely.
Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.